Welcome to NFL Total Access, the locker room. I'm Michael Robinson.
And I'm Mike Garofalo. Mike Rob, today we've got a guy who was just a fantastic player. I mean, every time I watched him, his ability to do a little bit of everything, to run with power, when those legs got churning, he was tough to get a hold of and tough to bring down. And at any moment, he could take it to the house. I'm talking about former Rams running back Steven Jackson, also the Falcons and the Patriots, as we'll get into later on. Don't ever miss that Belichick story. Everybody's got one that's been in and around Foxborough. He's got some good ones all throughout, but certainly his story about New England.
Yeah, he got a great story about New England. And he also validated another guy's locker room story. You guys don't want to miss it. And here we have Jeezy. I'm a big fan of this dude, huge fan of this guy. He's the Rams all-time leading rusher. And I don't even think people really understand how great this guy was. Running back, Steven Jackson. Welcome to the show, big dog.
Man, I appreciate it. What's up, guys?
Man, we're doing great. Now, look, you know, as we talked before we came, before we went live, right, we do a locker room story before to start every show. Now it's your turn to bless us with a dope locker room story.
Oh, man. A lot of locker room stories, but I guess I'll go with one that I'm not truly a part of, but it's one that I have to kind of maybe share with you guys. So I think it's one of the greatest pranks that I've been able to bear witness to.
Okay.
So it was Jeff Fisher's first year with the Rams, right? And he brought in Cortland Finnegan. He brought some guys over with him that was trying to change the culture in St. Louis.
They were feisty.
Very feisty guys, right? So imagine, though, guys like myself have been there. All I know is St. Louis at the time. I'm like, whoa, they're on a different level with their prank. So first thing that happened was the defense, they had this internal battle about who could up the ante on one another. I'm like, just keep it on the defense. Like, just as long as you do that, we're good. So all of a sudden, we're having a practice, and you just see the whole, like, I think it was the linebacker corps. All of their cars on a flatbed.
What?
Right? Across, so we practiced on several fields, football fields, but across the way, there was like a parking lot for like these factories, kind of like, you know, buildings. And all you just see in the flatbed, you just see all these nice, like, you know, you got the G-Wagon, you got all these different nice high-end cars on a flatbed, and everybody, all of a sudden, practices get disturbed. I'm like, yo, that's my car. Like,
yeah.
So come to find now, telling the story a little bit, I'm telling it backwards. So the DB cars, and Cortland Finnegan was having a conniption, like he was going crazy. Like, I'm gonna find out who did this to us, da 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 da, it ain't over kind of thing. So the linebackers were behind it. So Cortland runs it up, right? And everybody knows him. If you played against him, he's very competitive, but that doesn't just stop on the football field. So he gets James Laurinaitis. At the time, had a very brand new Range Rover, a beautiful car. And he puts hundreds upon hundreds of crickets, live crickets inside. He went to a fishing bait, to like, you know, kind of spot, and just dumped all these crickets in the back of this Range Rover. Mind you, not only the smell, but he couldn't get rid of them, right? But this goes on. So he's about to be like in tears. He's so pissed. He's like, who's going to clean my car?
Yeah.
They had to get his car detailed like 5 times. And once we thought it was really done, like I had to intervene. Everybody had to get involved. It got a little rowdy, got ugly.
Yeah, I'd be upset about that.
We finally got this thing so clean, we thought it was done. It was over with. On his way home, he's admitted this. He talked about his AC unit.
No way, bro. Why y'all do that man like that?
I felt so bad for James. I felt so bad. I said, times have changed.
Yeah, because I mean, where I come from, that's, you know, we have an altercation.
It's blowing up.
Yeah. We putting our hands up. And actually, Steven, this is how I know that's very true. First of all, you a solid dude. Second of all, we had Chris Long come on the show and tell the same exact story, bro. Yeah, so that's how I know it was dope. That's
you got verified.
Man, wow. Listen, we're right around Halloween. That is some horror movie type stuff when you flip on the AC and the crickets start flying out of there, man. That's ridiculous. Yeah. All right, so to your NFL career and Mike Rob, to your point, if people don't remember how good he was, I mean, home run threat, the ability to kind of take it to the house. at any moment. And you were coming out in 2004. Now, the Cowboys were your dad's favorite team, and I think they had a pick two or three spots in front of you, and they wound up dealing it away. I mean, take us through that moment there where you thought maybe I might be a Cowboy and maybe the disappointment of that and winding up really in a good spot anyway.
Yeah, so you hit it on the head. My dad was a Cowboy fan. He's from Arkansas, so, you know, back then in the South, you're anywhere close to proximity to there, you're a Cowboy fan. So growing up in a Cowboys household, I always was an annoying kind of a son. I rooted Buffalo Bills. I mean, I just always rooted the Cowboys because I just want to get under my dad's skin. He never gave me easy wins, right? So continuously, I had to learn that the hard way by going against the Cowboys in the early 90s. That being said, it gets to draft day, and a number of teams, you know, I was that guy that was invited to the green room, but back then, 15-minute rounds, you know, 10 guys particularly was invited, and I was on that cusp. You know, it could easily go top 10, but I could easily slide. What ultimately happened? So we decided not to, thinking that was a safer decision, but ESPN convinced us to bring in the cameras. So at least in the green room, you can hide. You can't hide from the camera at home. Like, I got to go to the bathroom. The projector started to slide, and I'll give you this. The 16th pick was the San Francisco 49ers. And at the time, the head coach was Dennis Erickson, who was my head coach in college, who left Oregon State to become 49ers head coach, right? So in my head, I'm like, that's the safety net. If anything's going to happen, the 49ers are going to draft me. And that didn't happen. So we get to the Cowboys in the 21st or something like that pick, and they decided to swap picks, and the Buffalo Bills took J.P. Lossman at the time. I was devastated. I was pissed. You know, I wanted to be a Cowboy in one sense for my dad, but in another sense, I didn't want to. And then when it didn't happen, I was like, see, this is why I'm not a Cowboy fan. Like, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, it was a thing that I think it hurt my dad more than anything. I haven't seen him with any Cowboy memorabilia ever again. But he converted to a Rams fan.
Now I'm looking at this, the way it went, because I'm thinking to myself, well, who did San Francisco wind up taking? They traded out. They traded. The Eagles came up and got Sean Andrews. I remember I was covering the Eagles draft that year, and the Eagles came flying up to go get Sean Andrews. So it's at the very least, at least he didn't take another player over you, right? It was a trade out. Probably a deal. Did he ever say anything to you about that? Did you ever talk to him after that?
We've definitely talked. I mean, yeah. We've talked about it several times. I think he brings it up out of just like an icebreaker sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, it wasn't my fault kind of thing. But you kind of learn that the NFL is a business and the head coach doesn't always get the last say.
Yeah.
And we'll just leave it at that.
There you go. There you go. Now, over 10,000 yards with the Rams. And Jeezy, I gotta paint a picture for you, bro, because I played him a few times playing for the Niners. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to crack on St. Louis, but there weren't many people in the stands half of the time we was playing. You can literally hear this dude running down the field. That's how fast he was running. That's how powerful of a runner he was. And I remember when you ran past us one time, I'm like, damn, that dude way bigger than I thought, man. How are we going to tackle him? Like, that Rams organization, they've had Eric Dickerson, Marshall Faulk, Todd Gurley. Do you ever sometimes feel like the forgotten dude? You know what I'm saying? Because you were the guy there for a number of years. And again, I was some of the teams that lost to y'all. You know what I'm saying? I don't think we were supposed to, but we did. But what's your mental on that? Have you ever felt like, man, damn, I don't get the respect I deserve?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think, but that has to play with the losing seasons in a small market, not being on a lot of primetime television. And even to be in the NFL, it's quite different today than it is, you know, what it was 10 years ago when we played. You know, you can watch a live game on your phone now. So playing in a losing market in a smaller market just didn't leave for a lot of my highlights to be shared around the world. You know, you think about some of the great runs of even just a decade ago. I think I've had some of those that's comparable, right? But they wasn't on a big scene, so they getting forgotten. So then you have somebody like Marshall goes and play in the Super Bowl, and I mean he's a dual threat and one of the best to ever play the position, but. You had ED in L.A. You had Todd Gurley in L.A. So there's a natural gravitation that's going to happen to those two guys. And with Marshall being in the bigger games, I am the forgotten person because I just didn't have those memories.
Mm. Well, that's a damn shame.
I'm going back through the production, and I'm saying – this guy was productive for a long time. It was even longer. I mean, look at the touches.
Though. Exactly, Jeezy. Exactly. When you look at his stats, you're like, damn. Why don't talk about this dude more?
It's not even like I knew the stats were good, Steven. I knew they were good. What's impressive to me that I look back on this is the touches. Okay. 2006, 436. Stop moving on me. 2009, 375. 2010, 376, 302. And by the way, the years that I'm skipping over are because they weren't 300, but they were in the high twos. So, you know, what was the secret to your longevity? I mean, what did you do over your career? What did you learn as you went through your career to make sure that you could handle that kind of workload?
Yeah, I mean, I think on top of those years you skipped over, I had some receptions around 30, 40 at the time, right? So, you know, it was one of those things that I really embraced. I looked up to guys that never came off the field, right? So the 90s running backs that come off the field, regardless of how big they were just always on the field, three down kind of runners. Then I inherently go to St. Louis where Marshall Faulkner come off the field because he was a dual threat. Mm-hmm. And that was a responsibility that Mike Marshall was like, yo, if you want to play in this offense, you need to be able to do the same thing. Yeah. So I didn't know any better. I grew up idolizing that kind of player. And then I walked into that kind of situation. So to me, it was like if I came off the field, it was because I needed a breather and that particular guy who was on the team backing me up, this is just a chance to showcase it for a couple of carries because I'm coming right back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Seeing running backs now willfully give up carries is crazy than me. I'm sure they're probably a lot healthier than, you know, compared to generations before. But when you talk about opportunities and you want to get that second and third bite at the apple of a contract, it came in me showing that you were consistently available.
Now, Jack, who were some of the runners you kind of looked up to as you were going through your journey getting to the National Football League? Did you model yourself after anybody?
I was a mixture of a lot of guys, man. I kind of talk about on my social media sites, all the guys I looked up to a lot. But for instance, I like to talk about guys that's forgotten like myself. So like a Ricky Waters, love him to death. You know, dual threat, he had the flash, the flare, the screen, you know, he did that. But also there were guys like Terry Allen, you know, the Washington Football Club that he ran the hell out of. You were talking about power earlier, you know, we were all flying. He was one of the best power runners because he was so patient. He trusted the A-gap till it wasn't there kind of situation. So I really learned how to run that play, particularly from watching a lot of film of him. And then you think about the bigger guys, the Eddie George, you know, you even go back to ED. Those guys are taller, bigger running backs. So I watched and modeled myself after them just seeing how they dealt with contact. Then, you know, you think about the bus. People don't realize how good his feet was, man. I mean, that guy had tremendous feet in traffic. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I would do a lot of rope drills and things on the football field, just practicing stepping over hands, stepping over people trying to get underneath. Nobody wanted to hit me up top. I was realistic about that. So I had to have good feet.
That's perfect, man. That's perfect, Jeezy.
Yeah. To go back to Mike Martz for a second. You talked about him. This guy was a revolutionary in a lot of ways back when he was coaching and then kind of fell off the map. I mean, I remember reading stories over the last couple of years about whatever happened to Mike Martz and how come he kind of faded away and really didn't get another chance. Go back to him as your coach. And, you know, I've heard mixed reviews as a head coach, but from an offensive standpoint and from some of the stuff that he was drawing up, I mean,
he's an acquired taste, Jeezy. He was my coach.
Yeah, but from a schematic standpoint, dude was on his game, right?
He was. You know, I would say, you know, one of my first meetings in the NFL, and it was offseason. You know, we were there early in May or something like that. And literally went off as a meeting. He's coaching the offense through, and he's talking to the receivers about trusting that you need to be inside the hash on a wrap four kind of thing, because when Bolger lets it go, he's letting it go on timing, not where you're going to be. And if they're throwing a ball in the place of trust in a spot, then all of a sudden you see Torrey Holder, Isaac Bruce flash on film and just boom, you know, they catch it with the hand. You're like, whoa, like you're coming from a college program and that football was, you know, it wasn't the best, right? So we stepped to that level of just seeing execution at that. It was like, whoa, this is a different level. But on the flip side of that, what I think when Mike talks about his acquired taste is he was so entrenched with his thoughts and his beliefs about how things was going to work. He was somewhat unwilling to change with the talent that maybe had been on the roster on that particular time. And I think that's what it was Achilles' heels was, that he was unwilling to just bend a little bit and so he could get the reproduction or the replenish the talent that he needed to continue down the offense that he wanted to run.
You know what?
I'm sorry, as a team leader, as a guy who was a really good offensive, did you try to communicate that to him? I mean, I always wonder, as a player, you probably should do that, but there's a line that maybe you don't cross.
I only got a year and a half on Mike. The organization let him go in the middle of my second year in the NFL. So I was a young pup. To be honest with you, I wouldn't say I was intimidated by him because my dad's a Marine. So, I mean, intimidation and yelling at you, they get underneath my skin. And Mike tend to try to intimidate you sometimes. But what I will say about Mike was I did respect his offensive mind. I just wish that our communication with one another would have been a little bit more fluid. Mm-hmm. I still think I could have learned a lot from him even to this day. And I think I know the game pretty well.
It's funny you say that, Jack, because I think he took that same trust speech. And when he came to San Francisco with us, he said the same damn thing. And when I ended up getting some personal time with him to talk to him, I'm like, bruh, we got Isaac Bruce now, and he's old. This is not when you was in the greatest show on turf. Torrey Holt ain't it on the other side. You see what I'm saying? We don't have Kurt Warner and Mark Bulger throwing the football. We had Sean Hill. Love Sean Hill. We had Sean Hill at the time. You know what I'm saying? And I think the intimidating part came from he was such a smart dude. He used big words when he was talking football. I mean, he was so cerebral that it intimidated you. You didn't even want to challenge him on some of the things he was saying. But what I want to ask you this, Stephen, is your time when you were leaving St. Louis, right? I got cut from the San Francisco 49ers. It was a time I was pissed off. You know, it was my first team I was with. Just talk about that transition when you spent, I think, 9 seasons there, and then all of a sudden you make the change. How was that transition for you?
It was tough. You know, the organization and I, we left. I wouldn't say on the best of terms, but respectable terms. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some things that were said and done prior to free agency that I knew I had a chance to be on day one available, right? And everybody doesn't get that respect.
Yeah.
You know, it's just true and mm-hmm. the way it goes sometimes. So I knew the respect from the organization was there. Now, what I didn't anticipate was when I made my decision to go to Atlanta, having to prove myself over again. And I, you know, and when you get to a new locker room, you get to a new stadium, you know, Roddy White's the man, Julio was up and coming, you know, you had Tony Gonzalez still on the roster. So you had all these guys that was already proven, they already proven themselves with the organization. And here I come, supposedly, you know, the answer to the running game. And when you don't get the touches or, you know, they don't understand how you need your feel, your touches for the rhythm in the game, you look like a big dud. And that was frustrating because I knew my talents and ability just wasn't reproducing like I hoped it would out there. We just hadn't been in the trenches long enough. And then once, you know, you get in the season, people not trying to figure each other out. Now at this point, it's like, what are you doing? Show and prove kind of thing. So it was a little frustrating there having to prove myself over. And I wish I would have kind of realized that or talked to somebody saying, like, go in there with that mentality, knowing that everything you've done in St. Louis,
it
doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a thing. Yeah.
You know, I almost forgot about the stint in New England at the end of your career.
15, yeah.
What's that?
That was 15, yeah.
2015.
Yeah. What was that? I mean, I know it was brief, but what was that experience like? And Belichick had you talk to the team before the AFC before the AFC Championship game in 2016 against the Broncos?
He did. He did. Again, goes back to 2004, Belichick. He was another team that they had two first-round draft picks. They took Vince mm-hmm. Wolfer, and I can't remember who else they took in the first round. But I spent a lot of time with Coach Belichick in my rookie year leading up to the draft, and he was considering of taking me then. And fast forward to what you just said in 15, he calls me up, right, because he's the GM. So he, like, when he called me, he was like, this is he's like, yo, Steven, you know, LeGarrette Blount had just went down. He was like, we need a guy. We need a big guy. He's like, this is your chance kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. you don't want to tell yourself no. I'm like, ew. Like, I just shut it down. I had told myself that if I didn't get a call by October, that it was over. I didn't want to be that guy. I just didn't want to be, you know, you get what I'm saying.
Hanging on and moving around.
Yeah. So when October came, I had shut it down in my mind. So I get this call in December and it's like, whoa, how do you say no to one, to a legendary coach, but to the opportunity that was ahead of me? So I take the call. I take the opportunity to get out there, and things are going smooth, you know. And he asked me, like, yeah, can you talk to the team? I'm like, it's the biggest game of my life, you know. I'm like, well, what do you want me to say? I've already got, you know, 4 or 5 championships at this time. And he's like, tell me a story. He was just like, tell me a story. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I get in there, and he wanted me to tell my story on the behalf, because they've only, like, Gronkowski, at the, all he knows is NFC champion, AFC championship, or Super Bowl. That's all he knows. He doesn't know anything different. And so I get in there, I tell my story. I'm like, God, there was a point in my career where I won 6 games in 3 seasons. You know, I went 3-13, 2-14, 1-15 consecutively. And all those times, although I was a 1,000-yard rusher, winning 6 games, you guys do that, you know, before your bye week kind of thing. And to have a phone call from Belichick in the middle of what I thought was my retirement to get this opportunity, I could have been blind. I would have still came out and taken this disadvantage of this, just because what you guys are touching and what you guys are doing is not normal. And many of you might want to switch switch careers. And I'll tell you, you know, there was some highs, there's some lows, but ultimately it's a team sport, and everything I've accomplished, I traded for what you guys have, you know, been able to do here. And it got the attention of a lot of people. And, you know, it was one of those things, Tom, you know, Brady was like, yo, thank you for that. Cause even him, and that was shocking to him to hear that. Just, he was like, damn. 6 games in 3 years? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, man, you don't have to repeat it. So.
Oh, man, dog. That's huge, man. Like, it's almost like he needed you to ground the team a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And that's exactly what your story did.
Well, I would say this, and I always look at them from afar and say, or I did. I mean, it's all broken up now, but how do you stay fresh? How do you stay on top? I mean, that's something that Brady does, and it's something that the entire operation did while they were there. So it's got to be stuff like that where you find any edge that you can to try to keep yourself sharp. That's my read from afar, anyway, Stephen.
Yeah, that's what you read it direct. So, you know, one of my first meetings there, coach was taking. He was picking on 2 teams that was coming up on the roster, but there was a scenario where a player made a bonehead decision, and he stopped and had the whole team, all 50 or 60 of us, watch this scenario. It was like, if this ever happened, this is not what you do. And he coaches you through the scenario why you don't do that. And it's not about either team getting ready for it. It's about the situation, to be ready for it and prepare for it. And it makes a lot of sense where you see them come back in these close games, because they're coached for the situation and not the, you know, the organization that they're getting ready to play necessarily.
So I know we're going to wrap up here. I want to ask you about what you're doing with the Legends community, man. I see you all the time at almost every Legends event, man. We chop it up, man. We're impacting, you know, these coaches, our Legends coaches that are out here in the community. Just talk about your role with the Legends community and what you're doing with the National Football League.
Yeah. So I've been with the Legends community now 5 years. I'm a Pacific Northwest coordinator based here in Las Vegas, where I work directly with the Las Vegas Raiders and the LA Rams. And primarily what I am responsible for is the Legends that's seeking help in their transition from playing days to retirement. Be it if you want to need help building a resume out, you want to, you know, maybe possibly get into media coaching, give you some points and directions there to even talk about benefits. I've even been fortunate enough to have this tough conversation with our brothers that may be going through depression or other issues, where we go through training to help these men to get to the next step, to the next day. And, you know, maybe just the next, get enough nerves to make the call of that I need help. And being able to do that, it's just rewarding, because all of us are not fortunate. We all don't have the long, you know, luxurious career that we all hope for. You go in day one, you think we're all going to play 20 yep. years and have a Hall of Fame career, but it's not necessarily so. So being a legend and being a coordinator here, you know, I take it with great pride and making sure that I keep guys encouraged, keep guys motivated, and letting them know that, you know, everything you've done on the football field is transferable to real life. It's just about deciding what it is that you want to do, and then we help you get in that, you know, in the right direction.
I have one more about the football stuff, but I do want to hit on this one. You know, it never ceases to amaze me that guys who play a fast, violent sport with a lot of adulation, with a lot of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, but a lot of sensory motivation here, mm-hmm. In what you're experiencing, And all of a sudden it goes quiet for a lot of guys at an early age, at an age where regular old folks are starting to really get into their career. And these guys are, you know, so how do you communicate with guys that, you know, there's a lot of life left for you, and you can't just kind of skate here. I mean, you could try, but you probably won't find a lot of happiness and satisfaction that way. You know, how do you communicate with guys and talk to them about that?
For me, I try to bring gravity to the conversation. I talk to them about, you know, life expectancy. You know, life expectancy here in the U.S., we are, as men, we're 78 years old, right? So you retire from the sport in your 20s and your 30s. It's a lot of life to live. And then you start thinking about what else out there is that you want to accomplish. And how I try to get people to look at it is there's other one or two things growing up that you said, if I'm not going to be a football player, I want to be this. Mm-hmm. Well, here's your opportunity to be that. And you create your own narrative once yet again by applying the same discipline, almost the same rules, getting up early, having a plan, having a purpose, and having a desire. And you get those guys to start seeing them as they are. They're legends. They're one part of the small 1% of guys that made a living from playing a child sport, and you try to just help them realign that same mentality in the new direction.
That's great work, man. Somebody's got to really do it, and somebody that guys have respect for, and I know they have respect for you. Back to the football thing for me. I remember talking to LeSean McCoy a couple of years ago about his chase for 12K, he called it, 12,000 rushing yards. And the reason that 12,000 was the number for him was every guy who's on the rushing list at 12,000 yards or more,
Hall of Fame,
except for Frank Gore, who will eventually be, but every other guy is in the Hall of Fame. The next guy is Fred Taylor. To me, Fred Taylor is a Hall of Famer, and I know that guys who covered him are adamant that Fred Taylor is a Hall of Famer. Well, guess who's right on Fred Taylor's heels?
Yeah.
Okay. 11,438 yards, right behind Fred Taylor at 11,695 yards. I know it's kind of an unfair question to a lot of guys, but I've learned to ask it because somebody's got to advocate for you guys, mm-hmm. and it might as well be yourself. Yeah. Every year when the Hall of Fame comes up, and I know what last year I think was your first year of eligibility or the year before.
It was my first, yeah.
Do you consider yourself a gold jacket wearing guy, and are you hopeful that that'll come for you someday?
Well, you know, this is how I answer that question. I think not only have my numbers are arguably with some of the best that ever played in the history of the sport, but there are things that quietly that I take pride in that's not so much are highlighted. Like my first carry in the National Football League was a fumble, right? Mm-hmm. Out of anxiety and just excited for the moment. I didn't lose a fumble the last 5 years of my career, right? So I learned from that and I perfected that. I am one of five people that ever have 8 consecutive 1,000-yard rushing. Mm. I don't know, the only person maybe comparable to what I had to endure was Barry Sanders, right? So I don't only compare the numbers that I've ever been able to compile, but the situation. I think you have to bring gravity to the things that I've been able to accomplish, what I went through to do it. And when you start looking at the game through that lens and just not numbers, I think, you know, rightfully so, my name should be considered, and you let the rest fall where they may.
Steven, I agree with you, brother. You're a Hall of Famer to me, I'm sure, to Jeezy and everybody else that's come in contact with you. You're a Hall of Fame person too, man. I can speak from experience. Every time I see you, bro, you dap me up. It's always love. You're always trying to help, man. I appreciate you coming on the show and stopping by. That'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access to Locker Room. For more insight with the Locker Room Point of View, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.